like any other. The National Medal of Honor Museum will be a unique home of military history. The 100,000 square foot museum will house exhibits, archives, and artifacts relating to the 3,500 U.S. troops who have been awarded the medal, the nation's highest honor for valor in combat. The museum will have 31,000 square feet of galleries dedicated to U.S. troops who have received the award. The museum CEO, former Navy SEAL and NASA astronaut Chris Cassidy, said the museum will focus on education as much as preservation. The building will have five areas dedicated to Medal of Honor winners from the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard. The main gallery will be located in a central plaza under a 25,000 square foot slab of steel, which will appear to be suspended in midair. It will be supported by five pillars. Black Rifle Coffee is a corporate sponsor of the museum, as are the Dallas Cowboys. The museum's board also includes over a dozen major corporations and six Medal of Honor recipients, including David Bellavia, Patrick Brady, and Britt Slabinski. Army Staff Sergeant Bellavia was awarded the medal for clearing an entire house by himself on November 10, 2004, as a squad leader in support of Operation Phantom Fury in Fallujah, Iraq. He killed four enemy fighters and wounded a fifth in close quarters battle. Army Major General Brady flew and coordinated the evacuation of 51 seriously wounded men during a firefight in Vietnam in January 1968. Slabinski, a Navy SEAL chief and team leader, led a rescue team of SEALs during Operation Anaconda in Afghanistan in March 2002. Slabinski and his team flew to a mountaintop ambush site to rescue Petty Officer First Class Neil Roberts, who had fallen from the back of a helicopter. Slabinski led the team through almost constant combat against an entrenched Taliban force. Along with the board members, former presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama serve as honorary directors. The museum is expected to open to the public in late 2024.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back.
Misfit Nation Show.
We are a show founded by a veteran and hosted by two veterans and a military spouse. Our mission is to get people to tell their stories to the world. If you're an author, share your tips with the Misfit Nation. If you're a musician or an actor, our audience needs to know how they too can get into the business. Coaches, we love our coaches. Come on and share your tips with Misfit Nation to help them become better versions of themselves. If you are a corporate leader or an entrepreneur, come on and show how you did it and how hard you have fought for success. If you are a veteran, first responder, or Gold Star family, we would love to have you come on and share your story with the Misfit Nation. We always have time for you. If you're feeling down, alone, or starting to see the darkness, Stop. Think about those who are around you. You are not alone. You will be missed. If you feel like your problems will be a burden to those in your inner circle or feel embarrassed, dial 988. If you are a veteran, take option one. We need you to keep pushing forward. Don't make a permanent solution to a temporary problem. If you are a new listener, welcome to the Misfit Nation Show. Be sure to subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast app. Also on our YouTube channel at @_MisfitNation. Subscribe and click the bell to keep you up to date on our latest episodes and all of our news. You can also find us on Heroes Media Group and About Face Radio. Now, let's get to the show!
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to our Sunday after dinner chat. Before we get going tonight, once again, just like we did Thursday, our hearts are heavy for the city of Burnsville, Minnesota, where police were responding to a domestic call today, domestic disturbance, and the suspect escalated immediately, firing on the police and responders. Two police officers, one paramedic fireman was killed, and one is in a critical condition. Those who were killed were police officers Paul Elmstrand, Matthew Rouge, and firefighter paramedic Adam Finzith, and Sergeant Adam Mendicott is injured and taken to the hospital with being taken care of at this time. So keep the thought there. City of Burnsville, they're, of course, their family and friends in your thoughts and prayers tonight as we go about our business here, knowing that those who are on the front lines every day are the ones who keep us safe out there. Tonight, we have a good show ahead of us. We have a public health writer, editor, native French speaker with a cognate education in public health with over 10 years of experience. Her passion is to improve accessibility to health services while supporting education, economic empowerment, and counseling as critical building blocks, which empower families to survive and thrive through life-changing events. She hopes that one day support families with knowledge, skills, and services required to survive in changing social and economic environments. So without further ado, let's welcome, I'm probably going to mess up her name, but Vincelli St. Dick to the Misfit Nation. Welcome, Vincelli.
Oh, you got it close. It's Vincelle St. Dick. Okay. How you doing?
Good. I was wondering, I was hoping you came in early so I can ask you that question, but thank you. Thank you for being here.
No, I know I had some technical difficulties, but I appreciate you having me on the show. And you know, one of the things I really appreciate about you is the fact that you started us off with, like, you know, just talking about recent events and how it has affected people. You know what I mean? And saying the names of the victims. I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes, like, you know, when you hear the news, they don't even say the names. And the fact that you did that to me, I was like, okay, that's different. You know, I appreciate you doing that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I only gave what I know on the situation there now, and it's a heartbreaking, of course, for the city of Burnside and of course, mm-hmm. Burnsville, and their families and friends and probably everyone that was in that area at the time. And the family that we're reacting to as well. So if we can make one thing clear and just keep their names alive and hope that things settle down and maybe they can find clarity.
Absolutely. No, for sure.
So I gave a couple sentences on you. I know you have a lot more in your background. So if you don't mind going back as far as you want to go to how we got here, that'd be awesome.
I mean, again, my story really starts, like, you know, when I lived in Haiti. I was born in the States, but I grew up in a small island. And growing up on that island definitely shaped who I am. It shaped my beliefs, my core values. And it really instilled in me a sense of commitment because I come from a long line of people who have always been in public service. And so for me, I think at the time when you're young, you don't really think about these things. I know I didn't. I was living from day to day. But then, you know, because I was surrounded by abject poverty, even though I didn't grow up in poverty, it made me conscious of what I had. It made me conscious of, you know, like, again, my sense of responsibility to make sure that other people don't go without. And so, you know, that's what led me to, you know, to work in public health. That's what's leading me right now, you know, getting a doctorate degree, you know, to really try to make some changes like policy wise and doing work that is very much community centric. And then, you know, eventually, you know, founding my business, Pathway Coach Writing, and doing this on the side. Where once again, you know, from a public service lens, really amplifying the voices of people who are not necessarily heard, you know, whose stories are not always published. Even as I was listening to the preview, like when we're talking about veterans, you know, I work with veterans. I've worked with people who had had their children serve. And sometimes these stories are not necessarily published in mainstream media. And so those are the people that I work with, you know, and that's how I got to where I am today.
So that's a good journey story there. So you got to experience being born here, raised in Haiti. And Haiti, like you said, is very a lot of people don't understand how poor things are in Haiti until someone like you can come on and explain what you don't see. You see a lot of times you see what's going good there and you don't see actually the things that are not going so well.
Yeah, because, you know, like sometimes, to be honest with you, even for me, you know, the pictures could be a little bit graphic. And that's the reason why sometimes you'll see, you know, the resorts, you'll see the beaches on Instagram, let's be real, but right. You won't see like, you know, the killings and all of that. I mean, it has the situation when I was growing up, it was not that bad. It was not in that state. It definitely deteriorated, you know, once I left the country and, you know, with bad policies, you know, corruption and then also just bad governance, you know, we are here, you know, in the current state we are in where, you know, the country is being run by gang leaders. With the recent assassination of the former president, Jovenel Moise, there's just a lot to unpack, and I still have family there. I mean, I have family all over, but I would say my immediate family lives there, and it's a constant struggle, you know, to, you know, always be, you know, just making sure that they're okay and making sure that my friends or their families are doing well too. So yes, it's not easy. It's not easy at all.
And I think when the earthquake hit, 2011-ish or so, 10 or 11, I guess, and that didn't help.
Yeah, 2010, back in 2010, yep.
That was a catalyst to, I guess, the spiral down to a lot of things. There was already bad stuff happening, but I think that shined a light on a lot of what was happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think also, too, you know, and again, you know, it's also a question of, you know, other countries' interventions as well. Sometimes you can have countries intervene in another country and it makes the situation a lot worse than it was. And so, you know, I know I can't really get too deep into that because I'm still, you know, to be honest with you, like I'm still learning about, you know, these nuances myself and trying to formulate my own thoughts. And not trying to have other people influence my thoughts on the issue. But I really think that when people say that things are going to get better, like I personally, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I don't see a way out of this. You know, like I just feel like it's one of these situations where things have to be really, really bad, you know, for it to like, you know, everything has to be turned upside down in order to find, you know, a solution out of this. But yes, this has been, you know, the deterioration is definitely or has been influenced by years and years of, you know, other outsiders coming in and trying to intervene. And I don't have any problems with support and help. I'm all about ask for support if you need the help. But sometimes when sometimes intervention may not always necessarily yield to a good outcome. Let's just put it that way.
That's a perfect way to put it right there. Sometimes it stirs the pot the wrong way and you get bad soup. So
I actually like the way you said it. Yes, bad soup for sure.
So I think the way you grew up kind of probably gave you some of that imagination to write as well. Was there any influence in your life, maybe a teacher, your parents, or someone that said you can write or they wrote and maybe gave you that burning sensation to write?
I would say like in my case, I would say I didn't have, or at least, you know, my family is so large. I'm sure we had writers, but I had never met them. Or there were people who were writers, but they died before I was born. I would say what I have learned over the years is that in order to be a good writer, you got to be a reader. So if nothing else, I feel like my parents, you know, taught me how to read at a very early age, because in Haiti, children usually start school at the age of 3. And so it's a different dynamic. I know in the US it's a little bit later on. And so my first gift was like, I think one of the comic books, it was like one of the classics. I don't know if you know Asterix and Obelix, or The Adventures of Tintin. So those types of comic books, I was exposed to them at an early age and it kind of stirred up my imagination. I didn't know that I was ever going to be a writer myself, but there was just, it planted a seed in me, right? And then I would say towards college, that's when I think that the universe kind of brought me to the right people who would ask me for feedback on their content. And then I would say right before the pandemic, one of my friends sat me down because she was writing a white paper. And so literally she had me edit it. She had me give her content feedback. and everything went well, you know, and for the, in that meeting for her. And she sat me down. She said, I really think you should do this like officially, you know, because before I was getting my clients by referrals, she said to me, you need to have a website, right? I would pay you for your services. And she did. And so that's how I stumbled on writing. It was not something pre-planned. You know, like you meet some of these people, they're like, you know, I've known all my life I was going to be a writer. No, that was not me. That was not me at all. I just stumbled on it by accident. And I realized that I had a knack for it. And so I just continued, right, to refine it, fine tune it, learn more and all of that.
And sometimes that's what it takes, you accidentally finding stuff. And like for me, I always would write stuff growing up and never thought anything about it because I was doing it because I was told to. You have to do this for school. Mm. So you just write, and I never thought I was creative. And now I have two books out at a later age. So
yeah,
the seed was there. The influence was, like you said, reading other books and getting, a grasp on which way I wanted to be a writer and things I liked. Mm-hmm. And that's what helped me, finding different books that I liked and then grasping my own style from that.
Yes. No, that's how you got to do it. And you'll be surprised. You know, sometimes I think that's one of the challenges that most of my clients have. It's really being patient with the process. Because again, you know, we live in a society of convenience. You know, let's write a book within 10 days. Let's write a book within a month. And my business doesn't really focus on that. We don't focus on speed. We focus on really honing in on the process of writing. And then most importantly, this is your end product. You got to be proud of what you're going to put out there, because I've seen works like where I've had to edit those, you know, we're going to write this book in 10 days. And then I'm realizing to myself, well, thank goodness that you came and worked with me. Because if you had sent it, like if you had published it, it probably would have been a problem because there were grammatical errors. There were so unfinished thoughts. And, you know, and that's the part that I play as a coach. It's like I always got to remind people, like, I'm also a potential consumer, too. And so if I feel like something is off, like other people will as well.
Oh, definitely. And if you can see that light bulb go off in your head, there's other writers mm-hmm. out there. See, to say, how did this pass editing? How did it get past come into print?
Yeah. So
it's good to have coaches like that. And with that, what led you to want to become a writing coach?
For me, I just wanted to be part of the movement of people. I wanted other people to see that there were folks who were, you know, who are minorities in the editing writing industry. And then also in my case, like being a woman too. As I was growing up, I didn't see many women editors. And so I said to myself that I wanted to be part of the movement where those industries reflect, you know, what America looks like. And so that's the reason why I decided to be part of the movement. And I think also too, maybe out of pride, now that I think about it, you know, I knew that I was really good at what I did. And so kind of, you know, that's the ego talk. And I said, okay, I'm going to try to do this, right? Worst case scenario, things don't pan out. And I can always say, okay, at least I tried. But things definitely went up, you know, after this.
So in coaching, there's lessons you got to learn as a coach, as well as being a writer, that no two writers are the same, and many are at different stages of becoming a writer or that journey in life to be a writer. How do you differentiate that, and what's your approach to them?
I think my approach is really, I use a lot of questionnaires and a lot of surveys, like StrengthFinder surveys. It's not specifically the StrengthFinder, but very similar, to try to gauge like where my clients are, because I've seen some of my clients like come in, they don't have any chapters written, and I'm just working with them on an outline, and really looking at content strategy, content idea. And then there are some where, you know, I can tell that, okay, like their level of writing is at the intermediate level or the advanced level. And like, based on the responses I get from these questionnaires, like I sort of gauge like how, like I kind of tailored the service to them, right? So someone who's more advanced, like they might not need as much handholding. They might not need as many of my resources, especially if the person is coming in and saying I've taken writing classes and all of that. They may not need a lot of sessions with me versus someone who is not a novice or intermediate. I would focus on, you know, common syntax, the elements of writing style, using prompts, very much tailored, like those prompts are tailored to whatever they're trying to write. And so that's my approach in working with my clients, engaging where they are, like through the use of questionnaires.
Well, that's good. That's a good approach. That way you find out each person individually, not just as writer A, B, or C, but you know exactly where they are and what their hiccups might be as they get into the journey with you.
And then also too, it's an iterative process. So those questionnaires, what it does for me is that it kickstarts a conversation, right? But it's not, it doesn't end there. Like I continuously, like I use the questionnaire as a metric, you know, to see the progress that they're making. And then I'll always refer back to the questionnaire, like, okay, this is where we started, but this is where we are now. You know, these are the things that still need some improvement. So there's always something to talk about in those sessions.
Definitely. And when you're with the writers and you see that maybe they get to chapter six and they hit that wall, that roadblock, that writer's block, or maybe they just, hey, I don't want to meet any deadlines. I'm just procrastinating because I can wait until the deadline is here to do it. How do you break them through that procrastination and maybe writer's block?
I'm a firm proponent of do a little bit every day. You know, I can tell you that I don't have an hour set aside all the time. I mean, I just told you I'm in a doctoral program doing this and having a 9-to-5. There's no time. So that 1 hour concept to me, I tell them, please just toss it out the window because you and I both know in their case, they have kids, they have spouses. If you can just allocate 15 minutes a day, and then I use this technique called the Pomodoro technique. You can set it up for 25 minutes, but really you can tweak it to 15 minutes. So after 15 minutes of writing, it gives you like an option to take a break. So you can take a break for 5 minutes, do something else, because the mind, and even for me at when I'm writing, because right before our session, I was writing something, the mind cannot sustain writing for like 2 or 3 hours straight with no break. Like you don't want that because that's how you stifle your creativity. Ideas are not able to come in. And so I would just tell them like, hey, break down your hour chunk, whatever, toss it out the window and just focus on writing for 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be coherent sentences. You don't need all that. You know, just jot down your ideas. And somehow, some way, the mind will try to make connections between everything that you've done. Actually, now, as we're speaking, I wanted to show you something. Like, I have this, I don't know if you can see it, but it's like this container. It's every year, what I do is that I put all my ideas down in the container. So that if I want to write something, all I have to do is just go inside, pick one of the pieces of paper and just like try to come up with like an article. Actually, most of the time the article just comes out of me, but that's another way of doing it too. If you have all these ideas, just jot them down a piece of paper, place it in a container and then get to it when you're able to.
And you'll never lose them either. So it's like almost a to-do list that's in your face all the time. So that's mm-hmm. pretty good. It's kind of like we had someone on the other day talk about the gratitude journal to tell themselves they're doing good or tell others they're doing well. It's basically the same thing. You take your notes and put them in there. So you're doing stuff, even though you might think that you're procrastinating, but you have it there. And next thing you pop it mm-hmm. out there, blast that one away too. It's a great plan.
And now that I think about it, where does procrastination come from? You know, where does it, I mean, is it, because, you know, again, like I have gone through therapy, you know, I've used therapy as a tool, you know what I mean, to come up with ideas and to have someone sort of reflect my own thoughts, you know, and to test my assumptions. Sometimes I ask myself, if procrastination is a form of like self-sabotage, you know what I mean? For the mind to say to you, but you're not doing enough. And that's not true. We're doing a whole lot. We have 8 hours in a day. We're doing a lot. Sometimes and no, that's true. And so I question sometimes like these things, like, you know, because sometimes I go through anxiety. And sometimes I would like take a moment. I'm like, where is that coming from? You know what I mean? And why am I feeling anxious? And then who am I trying to impress? Because the writing is not it. Yes, you're writing it for us. You're writing it for the audience. But ultimately, if you're not proud of it, whatever you pick up on your writing, someone else is going to pick up on it.
Definitely. Mm. I'm also in my doctoral process right now, too. And I understand the pain of it, and the love-hate relationship I have with it right now. And like you, I have my 9-to-5 job. I do my podcast, and then I do that, too. So it's all every one piece of it has a part of my day. And there's only so much of me I can put in each one of them. So sometimes with my doctoral process, I'll wait till the very last second of a checklist and I'll knock it out. I'll knock it out in one day. I'll knock everything out I need, send it in for review. And my first, like, oh, you must have been working on this the whole time. No. Just today. Just really, literally today. I opened it up and did it.
Facts.
That's just
facts.
How I live. Yeah.
And my question to you, I'm getting my doctorate in public health leadership. Where are you getting yours in?
Homeland Security.
Okay. Yeah, that's important stuff, you know.
So
thank you. No, I'm telling you, and I don't know about you, but in this doctoral process, I sometimes feel like, you know, yes, I'm adding to the knowledge base, but there's always this little voice. It's like I gotta be accurate. You know what I mean? There's no room to mess up here, right? So yeah, that's a whole nother. Section in and of itself, because, you know, funny enough, even before I knew I was going to get a doctorate degree, like I was working on people's dissertations. And when I saw what they were going through, I said, oh, my goodness, like this is not for the faint of heart. Like we're actually part of the top 1% because not many people go and get doctorate degrees. And so I don't know. I'm just like tilting my hat, my invisible hat to you. Like it's not for the faint of heart.
Not at all. And that's why I think in my group alone, I think 4 people have quit. So, and they got almost to the end and they're quitting because it just becomes overwhelming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They never talk about these people though. They never talk about the people who quit. Well, are we going to say they quit? Well, okay. Let's just be real. Yes, they quit. They burned out. Yeah. Yes. Most of the time, it's bad PR. They're not going to talk to you about these people. They want you to come in. They want to get your money. I hate to put it this way, but they want our funding. They're never going to talk about the number of people who left.
Nope.
So that's crazy to me. But hey, that's part. It's a business. So
at the end of the day, that's what all that is. Just like we were talking about Haiti before, the resorts get all the publicity because that's the money. The money comes in. And it all comes
exactly.
Back.
Exactly, because you imagine if people start talking about what all of the killings and all of that, like people will be like, you know what, that's not a travel destination. I don't care how beautiful that resort is, I'm not going. And Haiti heavily relies on tourism as well. So, but most of these small islands do anyway. So,
yeah, both sides of that island do. Dominican Republic on the other side of the Rubicon.
Yes,
the same thing. They only show you the beachfront properties.
Yes.
Like anything past the guarded towers, the guarded walls. And then when you go on like what they call excursions, you go on an excursion and you see with your own eyes what they're not trying to see. Like, now I understand. We drove through Dominican Republic in March, I believe we were there. And I felt like I was driving through bombed out places of Afghanistan.
Wow.
This is just like Afghanistan right here. This is horrible.
Mm.
That's the first thing that came to my mind when I seen it. And now I know why to keep us behind those big walls.
Mm, no, that's true. That's true. Without realizing that, you know, those 4 walls that they're putting you in, they don't protect you. No. They don't protect you, especially in war-torn areas. And you even said Afghanistan. Yeah, it's a constant. It's you operating off of fear, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
And there's people that will not leave the resort. And I said, why Ooh. Do you... why do you come to a country if you're not going to leave the resort?
Absorb yeah.
The most of the resorts just serve American food anyway. So you're just getting yeah. America with a different beach. So,
yeah.
Just my thoughts on it. So.
No, I hear you.
I don't know if you've seen the comment that I had posted up there. Jake, our resident hillbilly here, he put on there, he believes for some people it can be the fear of failing that causes their procrastination. And I think that is a good quote there too.
That's a good quote.
So that's a good one. When did you start your business? Was it when you were finished college or you were still in college?
I was still in college. But again, like at the time, you know, I didn't really take it that seriously. I was just doing it for friends and what have you. And so, yes, we will say that the unofficial, unofficial date. Okay. Date of inception was like when I was in college. But I literally got a website, kid you not, like the day before they told us that we had to stay home. That was when it was done. And then that's when I started the marketing. And, you know, I think I was using Facebook ads, Instagram ads. I would go to, you know, my hairdresser and, you know, give her like my business card. Like it was like the real deal. And then that's how I started getting clients. And then I think what happened, once I started the doctoral program this year, I took a pause. Like I took less clients because I said, you know what, let me try to see, you know, what's working, what's not working. I think that's another thing too. When you build a business, you got to take a moment and just pause and reflect on the year. You know, what went well, what didn't go well, do a gap analysis and trying to figure out, okay, like what's marketable now? Like right now with AI, like, you know, that's one of the services that I provide, you know, revising AI content, helping people get on podcasts, you know, which was something that I was toying with. But again, it didn't come to full fruition until, like, you know, I started getting, you know, getting these invitations as well. Because I'm one of these people, when I talk to my clients, everything that is on the website is because I've done it myself. So I have, like, you know, the experience doing it myself, and I have the credibility to say, okay, I know how you can get that opportunity and then go from there. What I don't promise is for people to, you know, I don't promise people like, hey, you're going to become a Pulitzer Prize winner, you know, by working. I don't do that because I think it's so deceiving. And I'm a good steward of people's funding. It's just, I'm not going to take your money if I know I can't help you, you know?
Right. And I think that's how you keep the authentic relations with not just your clients, because they become part of your brand, part of your family at that point.
Yes.
And they're successful. If you have bring them in, say you're going to win X amount of awards and they only win one, or they win none, then they'll say, oh, I'm never going to talk to her again. She failed me.
So, yeah. And you know, that's what I've been learning since last week. You know, it's, you know, sometimes truth hurts, but I would much rather be truthful to someone than take their money and just say, okay, just, you know, just take their money just for the sake of it. Mm-mm. No.
You know, I talked about the authentic connection with your clients. How about with when you build your network? I know you're big on LinkedIn because that's the best business place to be, but you're also on every other social media platform. How do you keep those authentic connections through social media and in life?
Oh, that's a good question. I this is something that I've been reflecting 2 weeks ago, funny enough, about how to maintain authentic relationships. I think that relationships to me is like a dance. You know, I will always take the first step, but the other person gotta be willing to take that first step as well. It takes two to tango. And so the way that I've been able to maintain those authentic relationships is just to, you know, communicate. I think it's a question of communicating your needs and wants, meeting people halfway, giving people the benefit of the doubt. I know that, you know, for example, there are some coaches who will, you know, cancel people, dismiss people who miss 3 appointments. And I'm one of these people, I like to give the benefit of the doubt. Like, I don't know what's going on in that person's world. Maybe they lost someone, maybe, you know, and I think it's important to always And this is what my family always tells me, always see beyond what you see. Don't be quick to judge. And that's what I've been applying for a long period of time. And don't get me wrong, sometimes I don't get it right. I mean, I'm human, I'm flawed. You know, so I really try to be the change I want to see in the world. So be more empathetic, giving people the benefit of the doubt, having those tough conversations in service of that care, in service of that relationship, instead of trying to keep the peace, because you can try to keep the peace and then the underlying symptoms of the problem are still not resolved. And that doesn't serve both parties. So I really try to do that. It's a work in progress. I'm gonna say that. It's a work in progress. But I love my clients. I wanna see them shine. I want them to look good and to feel good what they doing with their lives. And I mean, I love being a coach. You know what I mean? I think coaching is all about building people, uplifting people. And I know for me, when I look at my life and what I've been through, because there was a period of time when I came back to the States and we had to start all over again, I pretty much raised myself, you know, at the age of 12, and I had to figure things out. And so when I think about those tough nights, you know, when I went to sleep and I kept thinking, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to be in this situation, but I don't know. I don't want people to feel like that. You know, I want them to feel supported. And so there's a lot to unpack there. But yes, no, there was a period of time, you know, my parents made the difficult decision, you know, to leave me behind in the States. And I lived with a host family. I saw my family, obviously, but it's, you know, when they would travel to come see me, but it was tough. So.
Especially at that age, it's an age where you're going through changes as a human, and then you're on your own basically with the host family. But so it's good to see that you learned lessons through that and gauged your mental toughness through that too, your mindfulness, your mindset, your mental resilience as well. And that really helped you out. You mentioned judging the person by, don't judge the person by what you see, you judge by what you don't see. And that's perfect. Mm-hmm. And what you do with books, don't judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. So you got to get to the meat and potatoes of that book to understand, or the meat and potatoes of the person to find out exactly what their true self is, what they bring to the table. Are they only about themselves or are they about everybody? And those are all kinds of things you want to look for. And you get to know that just by talking to people.
Absolutely. And then also to add to what you said, you know, people can only give you what they have. They cannot give you what they don't have. They always talk about, like, I read all of these books on leadership and I'm thinking to myself, like, leadership happens, like, you know, you can read 95 books. It can give you theories, models, frameworks, all you want. But it's when you're on the job. You know what I mean? When you're on the job, and you're exposed to all of these different crises, that you really truly see the character of someone and their leadership capacity. And so I'm just always careful. You know, when someone comes, when I meet people on the path, I'm like, you know what? Let me get to know them. Let me get to understand the story, understand why they do what they do. And then not have any expectations. You know, let people surprise you.
Definitely. Yeah. Don't go in there with what you think they're going to be and just let it happen. Jake just jumped in again and said he loves your attitude, knowing you're great at grabbing the bull by the horns and going for it. Best wishes and hope you go far in your endeavors.
Oh, thank you, Jake.
So people are listening there. You're touching minds here too, so that's good. Where do you see you as a person and you as a business owner in 5 years?
Oh, you know, I could tell you. My mind automatically wants to tell you all the material things I'm going to have in 5 years, but that's no good. That's no good. I could have the Mercedes Benz. I could have the yacht. But if internally, you know, I haven't done the inner emotional work, like Dr. Brené Brown would say, then it's no good. I think 5 years from now, I want to be, I want to be wiser than I am right now. Because right now I am on this podcast with you and I'm talking to you based on the wisdom, the knowledge, and the resources I have right now. But 5 years from now, I want to be at a place in terms of business wise, definitely at a place where I can give back. You know, sometimes when business proliferate, there comes a point where they can do charity work. Well, that's what I want to do, right? 5 years from now or 10 years from now, if we really going to keep it real. Yeah. But in terms of person wise, I just want to become more wiser, you know, more wiser. And then also being given a lot more resources to help people, you know, become the best version of themselves. And it may not be through coaching, it may be through another avenue. Because, you know, I'm in this doctoral program to work in behavioral health. And I don't even know right now, like how, if I would be working with veterans, if I would be working with mothers who suffer from postpartum depression, I don't know where this is going to lead me. But that would be my ideal, to work in a field where, in a sector of public health where I can do that work.
And that's a great sector to be in. And it's very much needed right now. It's not just veterans that need mental health. It's everybody.
Yeah.
Needs a little something, needs a little, update to help them out, a little push in the right direction or some good advice to keep them going. And the world needs that. And I think you'll be great at both those things.
Oh, thank you.
So, Venshell, how can people get in contact with you if they want to just chat with you like we are now, or maybe hire you up as a coach?
You know what? You will find me. You definitely will find me on LinkedIn, but they can find me on Instagram under my name and my business name, Pathway Coach Writing, Twitter. I'm on all social media platforms. And then also they can always reach out to me via email and then visit my website at www.pathwaycoachwriting.com. So.
Awesome. And before I let you go, I want you to give the audience three things they can do on a daily basis to make life a little easier.
To make your life easier, I would say, you know, continue to do the self-reflection work, because I think the more you know yourself, you know, everything else kind of falls into place, because everything will be driven by, you know, your core values and the things that you love, which gets me to the second point. You know, if there's something that you're doing right now that doesn't bring you joy, just stop right here. Stop the traffic altogether. And then just go and find, like, you know, the things that really make your heart sing. That's very, very important, because if you're not having fun, why even do it? Right. You know, coaching is not it's not a job for me. It's my passion. It's part of my calling. And so I love what I do. So I'm hoping that you find what you love as well. And then also, the third thing, keep an open mind. You know, sometimes success, you know, whether it's in your business and in life, is not a linear process. And being able to just embrace the change as you go along is so critically important. Did I know that today I would be on this podcast? No. You know, 10 years ago, I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't know that I could be featured on a podcast. So it's just, I'm saying all this to say, just allow life to surprise you. Continue to take the steps that you need to grow, and things will fall into place. I promise you that, because it did for me. So.
Awesome. Thank you, Venshell. And thank you again for taking some of your time tonight on a Sunday night to hang out with us and just spread your wisdom with us. It's been awesome.
It's been awesome. Thank you for having me.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
This is a message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Got a question about your VA benefits, healthcare, or eligibility? Go to va.gov. where you can access a new interactive chatbot to ask questions 24/7. One can still browse va.gov for information, but you can now ask specific questions to the chatbot, like what's the PACT Act? How do I apply for disability benefits? What's my claim status? You can access the new feature through va.gov's Contact Us page. Then click on the Start Chat button. The chatbot will continue to improve veterans' access to information about the benefits and services they've earned. This is one way VA is offering seamless and secure access to its online resources.
Thanks for checking us out and being a part of the Misfit Nation show. Don't forget to visit our website at themisfitnation.com. That's themisfitnation.com. Check out all our past episodes and get some of the great Misfit Nation gear for you and your family. As always, be humble, stay hungry, and keep hustling. Because we are
Misfit Nation. Misfit Nation.